I'm Molly Wansell.
And I'm Geoffrey Wansell.
And for the last 16 years or thereabouts, we have been having lunch every Saturday, and often our conversation turns to murder.
And that's what's prompted us to launch this true crime podcast called Blood Ties.
Hi everyone, welcome back to the Blood Ties podcast. I'm Molly Wansell and I'm here with my father, Geoffrey Wansell.
Hello everyone, welcome back. Thank you for listening. It's very nice to have Molly back. Done a few without her. It's quite nice to have a companion.
It's quite nice to do it without me.
No, it's quite nice to have a companion. Molly's been helping me get my advent calendar out. Very yep. Important.
I bought myself a really expensive advent calendar.
Gosh, good for you. Good
for you. It's a beauty advent calendar, so every day you get a different beauty product.
Oh, well.
But it's one of those ones where they're like, oh, spend £200, but you get like £1,500 worth of product or something.
Crikey.
I realise this makes me sound like a total div during a cost of living crisis, but that's my gift to myself.
Well, I think that's very nice. I haven't given myself a gift yet.
I don't think people know that I'm obsessed with beauty because we don't talk about it that much on this podcast. But
no.
I am obsessed with skincare.
Yes. Molly has a particular interest in skincare. However, that being said, what have you done this week? Have you done lots of exciting things?
I was at Mum's this week.
Oh, yes. You've been away in Oxfordshire.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's nice. I've been either recording or sort of hiding.
Recovering.
I fell down some steps, stupidly, entirely by accident, while pretty sober. So it was a bit of a shock, really.
I feel like maybe you were lucky that you didn't know it was coming, because if your body's more loose, then it's when you tense up that you tend to break bones and stuff.
Absolutely, but I was extremely lucky. I didn't have 12
to 14
steps.
I think it's wild that you didn't break anything.
Oh, I think it's...
Yeah.
You know.
I think the gods were shining on you.
I think they were.
I mean, you're pretty beat up, but not...
No, but I don't have a broken leg, hip,
or
neck.
Or hip, yeah, you could
neck.
Have been...
I talked to somebody yesterday who said their friend fell down, you know, like same sort of thing, you know, down the basement steps into the cellar. Died.
Died.
Mm.
Okay, well, I don't want that.
So I'm lucky to be broadcasting. I've been broadcasting this week.
Don't do it again.
I'll try not to, I assure you. I didn't do it by design.
I'm going to get the new Converse out of the cupboard as well.
Okay. I'm wearing the old Converse, which is getting rather gloomy looks, Molly.
They're a bit dirty and old. And I bought you new ones, but you're so thrifty, you've left them in the cupboard for 6 months.
Well, I am thrifty. Actually, it's longer than 6 months.
No, I could have bought them for you when you did the tour. Okay, well, we're definitely getting them. I'm putting the advent calendar up and putting you in new shoes before we leave.
Well, no, come on. All right, we'll see.
Try and stop me.
Oh, I wouldn't dream of it, Molly. I wouldn't dream of it. Anyway, I've done two lots of true crime.
You're filming to this
lots
week,
of true crime
you?
This week. One about 10 Rillings in Place and another one about...
Every single murder ever.
A group, Murderous Minds, the show's called. For some, I think it'll probably end up in America. But
did you meet Ramon?
I did, yes. Very sweet. Very nice. Very helpful. But these days, it's really chalk and cheese. I mean, the first thing I did this last week was one man and a camera. One man, one camera. He did the sound and the camera. Then I go to this thing, second thing this week. There's three cameras, three people. I mean, you just can't tell.
I've got an opinion on that, but I'm going to keep it to myself.
Okay, you keep it to yourself. Otherwise, I should probably get upset at all.
Well, the first set of people,
well, they
don't like to spend money. So.
Cheese pairing, aren't they?
So that would have something to do with it.
Yeah, but these guys, this second group, not only did they have a purpose-built studio in their offices, which I think was very impressive, but they had a mountain of equipment. I mean, really good equipment. They had a spare camera as well as the three they'd set up.
But they want you from all three angles.
Yeah, you know, it's basically the same headshot.
And they had a Steadicam guy just going round.
But the one slightly unusual thing about this one was, is that they had a full length. Because I'm not used to full lengths.
Oh,
really.
Yeah, you're usually just a top half man. Of course, you were wearing appropriate clothing top to toe, so you were fine.
Yeah, I was. Yeah. Fortunately, touch wood.
And I
was
even wearing. Go with a bad, but bottom
I was even
top
wearing
off.
The right colour socks, which is very important these days. However, Mo, what you you've been sort of resting. That's a good thing.
Oh, yeah.
Good. Excellent. Well, thanks to Sam Brain, I'm keen to, we should call this episode The Backpacker Killer.
Was this Sam's suggestion?
No, she just wanted to make sure there was a nice warm start, a bit of an uplifting start. Because you normally do it. When I'm on my own, I sometimes forget.
Oh, yes, but that's when I'm not here to do it for you.
That's right.
So I'm trying to... Do you want to do it yourself?
Well, I don't have
Instead
to do it.
Instead of me saying, here we go with the backpacker killer, you're going to do it yourself.
No, you're going to do it. And I'm just telling you.
Okay, well, here we go with the backpacker killer.
In the 1980s, and 90s, a great many young people anxious to travel the world went to Australia, among many other places, of course, but certainly Australia, from England and indeed from America and from Europe. But as the 90s progressed, and in particular the 90s opened, a spate of killings took place in New South Wales. Several backpackers had disappeared. And what happened then was, and that this leads on to what the story will be next week, people became very worried. You know, the parents were worried, are you sure you should go backpacking? And, you know, and so what happened was that backpackers tended to go in pairs rather than alone, whereas in the 80s they'd quite often go on their own. And Australia, as you know, is a giant country with huge expanses of wilderness, literally uninhabited. And it's vast. But, so let's go back to December 1990. I know now, a long time ago, 32 years. Two backpackers left Sydney, Deborah Everest and James Gibson. Everest was 19 and so was James, 19. And they disappeared into thin air.
Where were they from?
Well, I think they were from Australia.
Oh, okay.
And then on the 20th of January, only a few weeks later, a girl from Germany, Simone Schmidt, who was 21, she was leaving Sydney for Melbourne, again disappeared into thin air. The following December, which makes it a good December story, the following December, a German called Gabor Neugebauer and Anja Habschied, both German, left Sydney on the 26th of December 1991 and disappeared into thin air. A few months later, in April 1992, two British backpackers, Caroline Oakes, who was 21, and Joanne Walters, who was 22, were last seen at Sydney, and they too disappeared with their backpacks. So that makes seven disappeared backpackers in a comparatively short space of time. Now, at that point, no one was really putting two and two together and saying, I think we might have a serial killer. But it gradually began to emerge as the bodies started to turn up. About 6 months after Caroline and Joanne disappeared in April 92, in September, some orienteering runners, you know, orienteering, you do that funny across yep. hills and stuff, discovered a concealed corpse in the Bellagio State Forest in New South Wales. Now, you can look it up. It's just part of New South Wales, north of Sydney. The following morning, the police found another body, corpse, 100 metres away. They were eventually identified by dental records as the last two disappeareds. That was Caroline Oakes and Joanne Walters from Britain. Walters had been stabbed 15 times, 9 times in the back, and Clark had been shot 10 times in the head and body. And indeed, it's suggested by the police that she may even have been used as target practice.
Alive or dead?
I suspect alive. In October 1993, a man looking for firewood in a remote part of the same Bellagio State Forest found bones, and the police found two bodies nearby. They were identified, finally, again with the help of dental records, as the first two disappears, Gibson and Everest. Gibson's skeleton was in a fetal position and had been stabbed 8 times. Everest was being savagely beaten, her skull fractured, her jaw broken, and she too had been stabbed. Then on the 1st of November 1993, just a few weeks later, a skeleton was found in the same forest, the Bellagio State Forest, who was identified as the German Simone Schmidt. Clothing found nearby wasn't Schmidt's, but belonged to the other two Germans, Habschied and Neugeberger. They were buried in shallow graves about 50 metres apart. Habschied had been decapitated. In fact, the skull has never been found, whereas Neugeberger had been shot in the head 6 times. You now have 7 bodies. 7 disappeared backpackers, 7 bodies. A spree by anyone's description. And of course, quite rightly, the New South Wales police set up a task force in October 93, just before, after the discoveries of victims 1, 2, 3 and 4, and before the discoveries of the 5th, 6th and 7th victim. Massive reward was offered. $500,000 Australian. There was public warnings about hitchhiking. There was a grave, grave concern that people should be warned of the possible dangers they face if they decide to scoot off on their own in the wilderness. The most important thing about all these 7 killings, however, they all had the same MO. They were all dumped in the same forest. They were all covered with a pyramid of sticks and ferns. Each had multiple stab wounds or gunshot wounds. Many had been sexually assaulted, and it was clear to the authorities that the man must have been driving a 4-wheel drive. He kept, so it was assumed by the police at that time, the victims kept alive for some time. He toyed with them.
Well, they were all taken at a relatively similar time, weren't they?
Not
huge gaps in between.
No.
I wonder if they were held in the same place.
No, I think he built separate camps.
Okay.
For them. And so he could taunt them, really.
Go from one to the other.
Yeah. Now, it was originally assumed that there must have been 2 killers, because after all, it would be quite difficult to subdue 2 people.
Yeah, it's a lot of work.
No. It was interesting. But the important point for our purposes is that they were identical modus operandi. They all were the same. All buried in the same way. All. And then in November 1993, in the wake of the task force being set up in October, a Brit called Paul Onions, who was 24, called the New South Wales police from the UK to tell them about an attempted robbery he'd suffered on the 25th of January 1990, some 3 years before. He'd been backpacking and he'd been offered a lift in a place called Mittagong, about 1 kilometre from the Bellagio State Forest. He's on his own, and a man called Bill has given him a lift, offered him a lift, who then produced a gun and some rope. Onions, sensing that he was about to be robbed or worse, jumped out of the car and ran off. Bill shot at him, but missed him. He just ran away. Thankfully, the man disappeared. But what that did, Onions then flagged down a passing car, which was driven by a woman called Joanne Berry, and they reported the incident to the police. They offered a good description of the 4-wheel drive, And they offered a good description of the man. But remember, this attempt was made before the first killings that we know of.
Mm.
Attention fell on a man called Ivan Milat because he had the right car. And Milat came from what could be described as a pretty dangerous family. He was quite often known for taking his brothers. He had quite a lot of brothers' identity. So he was known as Bill because he had a brother called Bill and another brother called Richard. And they all got in trouble. They were all in trouble. Anyway, on the 6th of May 1994, Onions, who'd flown over from Britain to Australia, positively identified Milat. And Milat was charged with the robbery attempt and the weapons that he'd used before Paul Onions had run off. So began a series of searches, not just of Milat's house, but also of his mother's house, and the houses of five of his brothers, two of whom were Richard and Walter. A positive array of weapons were found. 24. 250 kilograms of ammunition, an amazing amount. Belongings of the victims were also found in the houses. And on the 31st of May 1994, Ivan Milat was charged with 7 backpacker murders. I was very interested in this case because, in fact, I had to remind myself about it. Because the second case, the case I'm going to do next week, is exactly reflected in this case. In other words, there's a similar pattern to them. And I thought it would be interesting to do 2 Australian backpacker stories together.
Charles Sobrage did Travellers too.
Anyway, on the 26th of March 1996, Milat's trial begins in the New South Wales Supreme Court. His defence was that the evidence was entirely circumstantial, there was nothing to link him directly with any of the bodies, and that perhaps his brother Richard was the real killer. It was a very strange family. I'm afraid, even though they called 145 witnesses, an astonishing number. But nevertheless, 3 months later, on the 27th of July, after 18 weeks of trial, Milat was found guilty of all 7 murders, as well as the attack on Onions. I mean, it was quite clear, called similar fact evidence. You know, he's done it before. Look what happened to this poor man who survived. A so-called similar fact. And Milat was sentenced to 7 life sentences, as well as 17 years for the attack on Onions, effectively meaning that he will never be released. Later on, as years passed, Milat's then defence lawyer suggested that his sister Shirley had assisted him in the killing of the 2 Brits, Clark and Walters. There was always a suggestion that there might have been an accomplice.
Well, yeah, because it's a lot of work.
Yeah. Perhaps it's just worth saying that there's a tiny bit of background that Milat was the 5th of 14 children to a Croatian emigrant, Stephen Milat, and an Australian, Margaret Piddleton, who married him when she was just 16. The boys and the children, there was a string of juvenile offences from breaking and entering, theft. And in April 1971, when Milat was really young, he was charged with the abduction of 2 hitchhikers, one of whom was raped. He served a period of imprisonment for that. In fact, he didn't go to jail. He fled to New Zealand for 9 months and was rearrested when he returned to Australia. He took a job as a truck driver for the Road and Traffic Authority, a job he kept all the way through until his arrest. Milat never confessed. He was born in December 1944 and finally died of esophageal and stomach cancer in jail on the 27th of October 2019 at the age of 74. Throughout, he maintained his innocence. Well, make of that as you want, but it would seem to me that as ever, and as we've seen to each other, told each other many times, Mo, killers like to maintain their innocence.
Mm.
Everybody's innocent. I'm somebody else did it. It's not me. And it's nothing fresh or new. But that's the story of the backpacker killer. And I think quite an interesting one because it's relatively little told. We know lots and lots about the American serial killers, but we know relatively little
about Australian ones.
About Australian ones. I mean, I think we've maybe done one before.
We've definitely done one. And there's quite a few podcasts about Australian cases, aren't there? There's that teacher's pet one about that man who killed his, well, allegedly killed his wife and then took up with the babysitter who was his pupil.
Yes, that's right.
And
we've done one Latin American one, haven't we?
We did the Andes child killer who killed like 300 kids or something.
Yeah.
Wild.
But I think it's interesting to look at different places. And this, I should say, I will say again when I get to it, but this was suggested to me by one of our listeners, Susie Hill, who wanted me to do another case very similar or in a similar area. And I thought, well, I think I'd like to do the backpacker killer first, because in a way one leads on to the other.
Okay.
And it makes me more coherent story.
Is that what next week's one?
That's next week's one. No, this week is the backpacker killer. So are you back at work next week, Mo, or you work anyway? You never don't work, but I mean,
I never don't work.
You're always
but
working.
Yes, I'm back at work, yeah.
We should also say that we're planning after the next one, not this one, after the next one, we're going to take a little break.
Christmas break.
From between mid-December and mid-January.
Jeffrey's in charge now because I do less podcasts, so he chooses what happens.
Well, I wouldn't say I'm in charge, but it's a joint effort, this. It's a joint endeavour, as the police would call it. Doesn't matter who decides.
I think you've taken more of the, maybe a sort of 70-30.
Oh, I don't think so.
Now.
Yeah, I've got to do more.
I did 5 years of 50-50.
Yeah, I've done a bit more since the 5 year anniversary, and I haven't done enough of that Patreon. I've got to do more of that. That's one of my resolutions for 2023.
It's tricky, isn't it? Because it requires you to do techie things, and that's kind of like.
Is it?
I'm sure Sam would help if you did the videos.
Yeah, I think we'll get Sam to
you
help.
Did all those videos for your Instagram when you did the tour. I don't think it's much different.
It isn't really.
To do, just do one of those every so often about what's going on.
Yes, I can do that.
Or if an interesting true crime story pops up.
Yes. Well, they're always interesting.
They're always. I feel like there's been like a sort of weird spate of like the sort of the teenage boys who were stabbed by another teenager. Then we had the babies, dead babies in Wales. And we had the children in the fire in Nottingham.
Yep.
It's that time of year, isn't it?
Two children and their mother.
Yeah.
We have yet to see the resolution of that.
There's been a real... Have we had a resolution of the babies in Wales at Bridge End? Have we? Mm. Yeah, it feels like there's been like a real...
Well, it's always said that the closer you get to Christmas, the more...
Ugh, domestic stuff.
Yeah.
It's the pits.
People expect so much and it doesn't fulfill their expectations.
It's the pits.
And they get angry. Or maybe they drink a bit too much, or maybe they take too many drugs. I'm not blaming everything on drink or drugs, but I'm simply saying that's an added element.
It's wild.
It is.
Yeah, it's really miserable.
Well,
Christmas is such a funny thing, isn't it?
Yeah, Christmas is a funny thing. Mm. Not my favourite time of the year. Well, everybody knows that.
Well, you don't like any time of year where everyone doesn't work.
No, I don't.
That's your problem.
My problem is I like working.
Imagine growing up with someone who hates holidays.
Yes, well, it must have been very difficult.
Imagine how fun that was.
Yes.
Ugh, not another bank holiday.
Ugh, not another bloody holiday. Yes.
Ugh.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
It's okay, don't worry.
Well, I apologize. We survived. I apologize in retrospect.
We survived.
Yeah.
We live to tell the tale.
Well, I hope so.
What were you listening to the other day? I was listening to a podcast and apparently Robin Williams said if your children can pay for their own therapy, it means you've been pretty successful in raising them.
That's a very good one. Never heard that before.
Which I thought was pretty good.
That's very good. I greatly admire that. That's wonderful.
Yeah. Well, that was quite clever.
Yeah, I do too. Now, we ought to do, because I haven't done it, when I do it on my own, I'm not very good at this. We ought to do how you contact us.
We haven't been very good at responding, so I don't know. I haven't checked the email and you haven't done the Instagram, so no one's responded to anything
Sam has.
Oh, Sam has. She posts, she doesn't reply to people's messages.
Oh, well, we could do that later.
At lunch, yeah.
Yeah, we'll do it later.
So I'm sorry about that, but I just... we haven't done it.
I press my Instagram on my phone and it says, what's your sign in? And I've got no idea what it is.
Yeah, I know this is one of the issues.
I'm completely at a loss.
Of Jeffrey being in charge of the Instagram, but that's how it is now. So the responses will come.
Yes, it might just be a little slower.
But yes, Instagram and Twitter are bloodties_pod and our email is... bloodties.podcast@gmail.com. But to be honest, the best way to get hold of us is probably through Jeffrey, because he's most likely to respond.
Yeah.
So if you go to jeffreywantsall.com, you'll find his email on there.
Yep, you
will. Just email him direct, guys. Cut out the middleman.
Yeah, cut out the middleman. Just email me.
Just email Jeffrey if you
want. I do get very nice emails, actually. Very sweet.
If you have any suggestions for the podcast or you want to say anything.
Oh, no, absolutely. I mean, I've had some charming
that's the best way to get hold of us
notes
mainly.
From people just absolutely touching. I did an interview which a lot of people kindly wrote to me about.
Oh, you did an interview on the podcast?
Yes, an interview on the podcast.
People like that?
They did, they liked it a lot.
That's good.
I got a note to do of a man this week who said, why don't you do Pottery Cottage? Crikey, I tried to get Pottery Cottage. Remember that? The killing in the snow?
Yeah.
One of the first time
we
a policeman...
We did it, didn't we?
I don't think we did.
Well, you tried to... You gave it to me as one of the things you wanted to get made into a TV show.
Yeah. Never mind. Well, I will do Pottery... If I haven't done it, Neil, who you can't...
I redid the list the other day, didn't I?
I know. I've got it next door. I will do it if I haven't done it. I promise. Anyway, thank you. The best way of contacting me is my website. And I do reply to those.
You get straight to the source.
Sometimes it takes a long time, but I do reply.
A long time in your terms is what, 72 hours?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's that long time.
If that, yeah.
Yes. I like to reply to things quickly. Anyway, thank you. We ought to thank all the
thank
people.
Thank you to all the people who help us. Our producer, Sam Brain. My brother, Dan, who did the music. My friend, George, who drew our caricature. To Audio Boom for hosting us. And Jeffrey for all the hard work. And to you, the listeners, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for listening. And thank you to Molly, who originated this idea and has now passed it, shall we say, quietly onto me. Which I rather like, in a way. It's quite nice. Thank you, Mo, for doing that, for thinking this up. And as I often say at the end of these, do please be careful out there.